like to start by reading from this book, which is also in the bookstore. I think it's still available, the Oxford Book of Dreams, which is a compendium or an anthology of dreams from every source, psychological, literature, mostly literature. And you'll see some of the great names there, Shakespeare and Coleridge and John Updike, a recent writer, and Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, all those people have written about dreams in one form or another. What I'd like to read today is a poem by Walter de la Mare, a poet who's entitled The Dark Chateau or The Dark Castle. In dreams, a dark chateau stands ever open to me. In far ravines, dream waters flow, descending soundlessly. Above its peaks, the eagle floats, lone in the sunless sky. Mute are the golden woodland's throats of the birds flitting by. No voice is audible. The wind sleeps in its peace. No flower of the light can find refuge beneath its trees. Only the darkening ivy climbs, mingled with wilding rose and cypress. Morn and evening, time's black shadow rose. All vacant and unknown, only the dreamer steps from stone to hollow stone, where the green moss sleeps, peers at the river in its deeps, the eagle lone in the sky while the dew of evening drips coldly and silently. Would that I could steal in into each secret room, would that my sleep bright eyes could win to the inner gloom, gaze from the high windows far down its moldering walls, where amber clear still lethe flows and foaming falls. But ever as I gaze, from slumber soft doth come some touch, my stagnant sense to raise to its old earthly home. Fades then that sky serene, and peak of eagles snow, ageless snow, fades to a appalling dawn-lit green, my dark chateau. I thought what was so very beautiful about this is that he depicts his dream images so vividly. Being a good poet, he knows how to write about it. And then how he comes out of it, back to his old earthly home. He considers the waking state an old earthly home. He seems to be more at home in his dreams and dream images. And I thought I would give this as an introduction to how poets and mystics and even psychologists, certainly Kelsey, looks upon dreams as well as the spiritual reality that they touch, that speaks through dreams, since your conscious mind, your sensor, is asleep. So the psychological function of dreams is to touch the spiritual world, the archetypes, as Jung calls them, that can give you guidance and warning, comfort. And I'll give examples of those. Now, among Indians, American Indians, people, shamans who interpret dreams, stand in high esteem and have high status. People listen to their dreams. Dreams are regarded as very important, even prophetic, but mostly important in helping direct your life. Dreams never tell you specifically what to do, but what direction. It does very often tell you to turn around and change course. It often shows you where obstacles are. It warns you of dangers. And ultimately, when you know who your spiritual guide is, speaks to you of the wisdom that you need to carry along with you. Now, among American Indians, the young boys are sent into the woods for their initiation, and they have to come back with a dream, or they wait till they receive a dream that tells them that will direct their lives. In our culture, we don't give people that much status. In fact, if you spend too much time either with mysticism or dreams, people begin to look askance, and we don't give it high status. Jung and dream analysis is coming into its own, and in the analytic hour, dreams are of high importance. In fact, when you go to a therapist of a Jungian orientation, you bring your dreams as well as Freudian orientation. There's no difference there. The emphasis is on dreams. In the interpretation, there's a difference. And I think Wednesday I'll be talking about how to interpret dreams according to Jung. And I will show the difference between the Freudian approach and the Jungian approach. Just for now, let me say that Jung was a disciple of Freud for 6 years, but saw beyond and interpreted dreams differently, and they had a hard falling out, and Jung forged ahead in a different direction. I should add that Jung is a Christian, was a Christian, he's Swiss, and descended from a long line of Protestant ministers, whereas Freud was of Jewish background and an agnostic, if not an atheist. So there is a big difference spiritually. But we'll talk about that next week. If you'd like to turn, no, don't turn to the Bible, just let me turn to the Bible, please. All of which are very familiar to you, I'm sure, but I'd like to go over them just to show you how important, both in the Old Testament and in the New, the dreams have been. In Genesis 15, Abraham has a famous dream of walking between the sacrifice and the fire, and it is a prelude or example of the covenant that God has made with Abraham. I myself am not an Old Testament scholar. I'm really pointing to the dream that he had. Also, it is important to realize that sometimes when they talk of visions, the word vision and dream could be interchangeable. It doesn't always have to be a night dream. Sometimes we have these waking dreams or visions. Jacob and Jacob's ladder, I think we all are familiar with. As a result of this dream, he decided to give 10% of his possessions to God. So I don't know if any of you have been told that Jacob was the first one who tithed. But he was reassured of God's presence, and the fact that he was hurt in his hip and limp or wounded in the wrestling with the angel was a way of transforming, giving him a sense of transformation. He was a different man, but also a reminder, a constant reminder of God's presence and what God had done to him. Joseph was called the dreamer. They say, here comes the dreamer. And that is why his brothers, who were probably more materialistically minded, more earthy, didn't want to have so much to do with dreams. And also because Joseph, of course, was a favorite, they sold him down the river. Well, not down the river, but they sold him to Egypt. And I love what it says, God, man intended it for evil, but God intended it for good. Because what happened to Joseph in Egypt is vital and powerful. And there, again, he was asked to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. And you know how important those dreams were. Prophetic as well. And he always was open to God and felt that he was a mouthpiece for in interpreting the dream. He didn't say he knew the answer, but that he was able to understand what God was trying to tell Pharaoh. When Moses stood before the burning bush, it was a vision, and there are lots of dreams or dreamlike trances that are described. The thing I'd like to quote here is that the people around him when he came down were criticizing him, and someone said, how dare you criticize Moses? God speaks face to face with Moses, but with us only in dreams.
think this quote is really important. Kelsey mentions it and says, dreams are the dark spirit, dark speech of the spirit. I'll say that again. Dreams are the dark speech of the spirit. So to most of us, God doesn't speak directly, but if we listen, we can hear wisdom, Sophia, God's voice, the Holy Spirit in our dreams.
Emily, what does that dark refer to? The night, or to the dark side, or to?
Well, just as we see now darkly, but then face to face. That kind
so
of
the
thing.
Hidden.
Hidden, secret.
Oh.
Yeah. Not dark in an evil sense, but dark in a mystical, difficult kind of thing.
And even the subconscious instead of the conscious.
Yes, right. Veil. Veil, that's very good. I forgot what that is. Gideon won a battle because of dreams. Samuel had dream visions and heard voices saying yes, and then answered, yes, Lord, I am here, send me. Saul laments before his death that God no longer spoke to him in dreams, and he did not get any guidance. It's kind of a sad ending for Saul. Jeremiah, Amos, Habakkuk, Zechariah, Joel, the Psalms, Job, and Daniel, above all, had visions and dreams that are beautifully described in the Bible. So all of this is to show you how important they were in the Old Testament. And when we come to the New Testament, I think we all know extremely well how Joseph was led at every turn to espouse Mary, to give the name Jesus to his baby, to her baby, and to flee to Egypt. The Greek language has 12 words for dreams and visions, 12 different words. And to describe the spiritual encounter, we have just dream and visions. So in a sense, our language isn't as subtle, doesn't differentiate as much the spiritual reality, because our whole orientation is towards the five senses, the material world, and perhaps we need to refine how we look at dreams and visions. Both, I mean, in our mind, we can't change the language, but realize that in ancient times, and I don't know enough about linguistics, but I think there are many languages that have many different words for the different kinds of spiritual experiences. When Jesus is praying in John 12, a voice answers from him, and he hears the voice, but the people only hear thunder. They say, hey, thunder. So often, we don't understand. That's again the veil, dark speech. If we hear voices or a voice speaking to us in a dream, it may not always be so very clear. Sometimes maybe even a pun sometimes, or cryptic. And that's why we free associate. If you were coming to an analytic hour, you would bring a dream, and then we take the key words and the key experiences and the key messages, and you would associate your meaning to that word or person or event. And it would be your meaning that had to click. Then you would go out and think about it and see how it really related. I don't think, and this comes down to our present day thing, that we have many prophetic dreams per se, because none of us are really prophets, but we can hear what is important to our particular life. To have a prophetic dream, you would have to have in conscious waking life a gift of seeing, a gift of extrasensory perception, and that would be like being a medium or Edgar Cayce or somebody like that. Most dreams then are processing dreams that process what you have experienced during the day, They're very forgettable. If you are intent on keeping a dream journal, which is helpful, even those dreams are important. Those dreams are valuable in, if you associate to them, you will say, see why or what it was during the day that grabbed you emotionally. Why was it that you remembered that out of all the things that happened, or all the dreams you had? So, in a sense, every dream can be interpreted. But, as I said earlier, about 10% of the dreams or less are big dreams, archetypal dreams that really you don't even have to write down. They will stand there and you will remember them, and they can act as guides. We all have anxiety dreams, and I think those are the most frequent. They occur before any change or unknown event, before exams, before a journey, certainly, before marriage, at the time of a person's illness, whatever causes your anxiety. And I don't think any one of us is immune just because we have faith. No one ever said we will not be anxious. So when you have an anxiety dream, it sometimes helps you to see what you're really anxious about. And I have kept dream journal for over 30 years, and I get to the point where I say, oh yeah, that's that one. Walking around, not finding the place I'm going to, or just not knowing how to connect. Another important aspect is that your psyche is slower. It's both timeless, but also slower to catch up. When you fly cross country, usually your psyche is still at home, and you can almost trace day by day how it catches up with you. And the reverse is true. When you go out, I would say that you'll all have lots of dreams about still being at home, both because it's a wish fulfillment, a remembrance, but mostly because your psyche is still here, even though your body is already out there doing its whatever. And when I first, last week, when I was doing this session, I had a dream that night of being at St. Martin's Table, where I volunteer, which is based on the Holden model. It's in Minneapolis. How many of you are here from Minneapolis? Oh, well, you have to all come. It's on Riverside near Augsburg. Maybe you've all been there already. Mary Schramm and John Schramm, who were directors of Holden, run the bookstore restaurant. We have good lunches. The servers are all volunteers, and we send all the tips to a hunger project, so it amounts to almost $1,600 to $1,700 a month overseas or local. So anyhow, in my dream, I was still at St. Martin's and everything was going topsy-turvy. But I was actually here, but in my dream, I was still there. Any questions? Any comments?
Emily, I've been wanting to ask you this question. It's not directly connected to what you've just been saying.
Go
ahead. If you comment on when I have problems with the boundaries between what's dreaming and what's reality. I'll give you an example. I entered my car the other day, and I had a couple of cassette tapes kind of scattered on the floor. And as I entered the car and was turning it on, I thought to myself, well, what was I so worried about? Those tapes aren't stolen, they're right there. And then I said to myself, what am I talking about? It was so real for just a moment, and then I flashed, and I remembered that was part of a dream I had had. But for that moment, that was so real that my tapes had all been stolen. And I really was disconnected there. And those kinds of things happen frequently, to the point that sometimes I feel like there's deja vu or something like that, which is very quite disconcerting, because the evidence is saying this is not true, but in my heart I know this has happened, and what it's done, it's been no dream.
Well, I think it happens to us often, and if you are in touch, very closely in touch with your dreams and your unconscious, the dividing line is not so sharp. And if it's a very vivid dream, and I've often dreamt of losing my purse, and I have to get up and really search to make sure that it's there, some dreams have such vivid images. And I think it speaks well for your connectedness, but it's disconcerting because in our consciousness, we want to be here and now and not mix up our realities. But as you said, you were able to differentiate. But I would say it points to the fact that you have very vivid dreams and a vivid memory of them. It's also a sign of imagination vivifies the dreams and the dream images. Talking about losing things or having them stolen, very common anxiety dream, as well as the dream of the archetype of the trickster coming in and taking something from you. We'll talk about that when we talk about archetypes, but there's a figure or a force called the trickster that appears in dreams that does things to you, steals your purse, makes you misplace things, breaks into your house, assaults you even. So that does happen quite often. But when you misplace your purse that has your IDs in it, it's like losing part of your identity. And it's important then to say, are you in transition? These dreams often occur. They're not exactly anxiety dreams, they're dreams of transition. You have an identity that you're leaving here and you're going somewhere else, say, or doing something else. Before entering college, for example, or starting a new venture, we often have those dreams.
I have another question.
All right.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between dreams and visions? In my experience, the quality of visions are much different than dreams. And in one sense, because they can be induced, they're more directed. And so I can see some relationships, but it's unclear to me. Can you say something more about it?
You said it right, correctly. They're induced and they're more clear and they're not as irrational. The thing about dreams is that your conscious mind is totally asleep, is not directing it at all. Even though there is a theory of lucid dreams where they say you can direct your dreams, I don't quite hold with that. A vision comes from the same source, but is on a more conscious level and is more directed.
It's like all the time I know that if I want to, I can stop this and get out and do the whole
thing. Exactly.
You know, but in a dream, I'm not able to do that.
Jung used to say, we don't dream, we are dreamed. So it's a passive thing, and we're really at the mercy of it. That's why they're sometimes frightening, because although when we dream of falling, for instance, we can usually wake ourselves before we fall, by and large, it's a passive thing that we cannot control and cannot stop. Whereas a vision, as you said, is more able to get out of this.
What does it mean when, like me, and for probably 20 years, I can't remember ever having a dream?
The lady here wants to ask a question.
I would like to ask a question. What is it when you dream one and the same dream again and again?
Okay. I'll try to answer both. I'll ask the lady in the back first. The same dream over and over again,
yeah.
A repetitive dream, we all have them. And I think they're very important because they're like an alarm clock or the beeper or something. It's getting your attention, telephone. It's calling your attention to something you should pay attention to consciously. And sometimes it's also a catching up type dream. There was one lady here who said that because she'd been dreaming of her husband over and over again, for many, many years after he died, both as a comfort and as a way of realizing, finally making her peace with the fact that really he is no longer living, but he's living in her memory. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
And as far as not, you said for 20 years you haven't remembered your dream?
I can't remember remembering dreams since I was a teenager.
So maybe you don't need to. But if you want to, I would like you. you to make the experiment here at Holden to, while we're having this emphasis on dreams, to ask that you remember it, and in the morning make a real effort and see if you don't come up with this as one image. Okay?
Yeah, what you were saying.
Yeah. Right. Now, one more thing. When I was preparing this, one night I woke up at 2, and clear as daylight, paradoxically, and I started writing down outline after outline after outline. Then I went back to sleep, and I had the most vivid, complicated, detailed dream ever. I had just finished writing Dreams Are Very Important, and then I was given this wonderful dream. The content of it is really not important. The fact that right after doing this, I had this really remarkable dream and hadn't had one for, or hadn't remembered one for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had one out-of-body experience. Now, is that really that, or is it just dream? But it was so vivid and real and wonderful. But was it a dream, or was it really out of body?
I have to say, like Elmer said this morning, I don't know. I don't know about out of body experiences or how they relate to dreams. They're obviously of the same order. But since I myself haven't experienced,
but it was outstanding.
Talk about it later. We did before. Okay, any more?
I'd like to comment on we had a foreign exchange student, a Japanese girl, and in the orientation we were there, the lecturer said, when you'll be dreaming, in her case, in Japanese for quite a while, but the day you dream in English, you're part of the community then or something. And I think it was 3 or 4 months after, wasn't it? She came down with a big smile on her face. And she said, I dreamt in English last night.
I would say that if you have two languages, let's say immigrants often dream in their mother tongue, mm-hmm. or father tongue. Thank you. That reminds me of the young girl who was here on the Waitrite assignment. She was from Thailand. I think her name was Thu. She was in my session and she spoke up when I mentioned dreams of snakes. I said dreams of snakes can be very scary, but they can also be a symbol of healing. For example, the doctor has intertwined snakes on a staff as his symbol. So snakes are a symbol of healing. She said in her country, there's a tradition that if you dream of a snake winding around your leg, and or biting you, that means, watch out, you're gonna fall in love. I had never heard that before, and I said I'd like to quote that because it's so unique.
I like that one the best of all.
Yeah. My snakes haven't bitten me lately. Which reminds me, I have to look up the dream. I remember one where, I have to look that one up. It's a stink bite on my hand. Did you have a question?
I thought
I saw
one. I just want to make a comment.
Could you speak a little louder?
Yes, I wanted to make a comment that, you know, here in this context, I find it probably very easy to discuss dreams or anything like that. But when I think about going back to my home, which isn't very far from here, and talking about dreams amongst the community that I'm in, I don't think that would be very well accepted. And I'm wondering, do you find that this is on the rise? I mean, you know, are we going to be able to discuss that amongst other people and talk to come, or?
Okay, being a psychologist, we can talk about almost anything. dreams are important in our profession, but as I said earlier, our culture, and even in the church, we do not respect dreams or talk about dreams. And Kelsey says that it was 1791 before since the last serious study of dreams in the Bible was made. It's coming back, and he wrote this book about 10 years ago, and it's beginning to be more accepted, especially since Jung's work is coming more into its own. You can find his books on dreams. Freud's books on dreams translated in small book form in almost any bookstore. But I don't think that your church is likely to have a seminar on dreams yet. But I think it's coming. Do any of you, in any of your congregations? And I'm so amazed because as I showed you, and as Kelsey shows, dreams in the Bible are so important at every turn, you know? But we're just a little scared. Yeah.
Is it possible that there are people who don't dream at all?
Well, physiologically, we know that everybody dreams 4 and 5 times
a day. Well, that's what I thought too, but I worked with a lady one time, and she says, I don't have time for such foolishness.
I know. She doesn't remember that.
She just doesn't remember. Just like me, I haven't remembered for 20 or 30 years.
She says, I go to bed to sleep. She says, I don't go to bed to dream.
Okay.
Yeah. But I know that I dream.
Say again.
Yes, they say
you dream. Let me say again. You have two functions in sleep. One is to rest the body. The other one is to clear the mind. And the dream curve is something like this. You start out awake and you go into a very deep sleep where you can hardly be awake. Dreamless, and you sleep and you relax, your body is relaxed. Then you've seen videotapes of people moving around, when they move and their eyes start moving, that's when they dream, and sleep is a little shallow.
That's what they call it, REM?
REM, right, R-E-M, rapid eye movement. At that point you can be awakened, and if you're awakened at that point, you always report a dream, so we know that they're there. Then you go back down into a sleepless. Because if you awaken at that point, you don't report a dream. This has been done scientifically. And you come back up, and there's another REM episode. I think the first one is longest, they get shorter and shorter. I'm not quite sure about that. Another REM episode, another dream, another deep sleep, not quite as deep, and another REM episode, depending on how long you're sleeping. This goes on and on and on. The last one is the most shallow sleep and the most likely to be remembered dream, you see, because that's when you wake up. And that transition is very, what's the word, shallow or easy, because you're almost awake but not quite, and you're still dreaming, you see. You may hear the alarm clock, turn it into some fire siren. You may wake up to music and be sitting in a concert. Someone may speak to you. Just before I left, my husband came up and said, breakfast is ready. And I said, oh, but I'm still eating my chicken, because I'm dreaming of eating chicken. That was very vivid. So we all do dream. Just so that, as I said, the body gets relaxed, the mind is cleared. But whether you remember them or not, that is your choice, and you don't have to. I'm merely saying that they can be quite valuable. A scientist, the one who discovered the benzene ring, was pondering and pondering and pondering the problem, finally dreamt of a snake biting its tail and said, oh, that's round. And then he tried that as a formula, and it worked. And there's a dark speech again. He didn't dream of the formula. I don't know the formula, but he didn't see the chemical formula. He dreamt of the shape. And because his mind was working on the problem, he made the connection. Similarly, the man who invented the sewing machine, been trying and trying, he had the needle going this way and it never worked, and he turned it around with the eye down below, and in a dream that came to him, and then it worked. Then he was able to solve the problem. Yeah. How long does this go? Till 1:45 or till 12:30? Do you know? Anybody? Betty? How much time do we have till?
See, it started at 1:45, so I guess it would be
till 1:45.
A lunch is 1:45.
Yeah, I don't know. We have a different lunch.
Oh, no.
Today.
No.
Well, 45.
12:45.
It's just 1:45. But this goes till 11:45.
The only somewhere I read that sleeping pills skip one stage of sleep, and that was part of the harm. Is that right?
I have heard this. I've also experienced it once or twice. I've had to take them, and I felt logy in the morning. Also, and I'm trained to remember dreams. I did not remember dreams. at that time. The pills sometimes have that effect. They probably affect your memory as well as your eye movement, I don't know. But it's true that medication can interfere with, help you sleep, but maybe that's why they're addictive. I really don't know.
Sometimes you can wake up, you're in a dream, you wake up laughing, you wake up crying.
Oh, yeah. All your emotions are, it's a catharsis, the word catharsis, you work through your emotions, not just the facts in your head, but also the emotions. And that's why sometimes these little snippets of dreams are interesting, because they'll show you what caused, what grabbed you emotionally.
I had a dream, well, this is many years ago, I had a dream that I was with a group. They were cruising on the Rhine River, and we were visiting Wiesbaden in Germany. Mm-hmm. I've never been abroad, but yet I could see those castles along the Rhine. Mm-hmm. And you know that a few weeks later, mm-hmm. I got an invitation in the mail to go along on a cruise to Germany.
All right. Well, okay, those are those wonderful things. I don't call them prophetic, but I call them synchronistic events.
Well, was that prophetic?
I said, I wouldn't call it prophetic. I would call it synchronistic. Jung talks about synchronistic.
I had no idea that this was coming.
I know, I'm trying to explain it. It works together, time, chronos, time, together. The time is foreshortened, so to speak. You dream of something, it's very vivid in your mind, you say, how did I dream about it? And then something comes along and it clicks back to the dream, you see? But the dream isn't prophetic unless you had that gift already. But we turn it around, the causality is turned around, you see? When this comes along, you click back to the dream.
It's funny, I never dreamt that dream again.
No, probably not.
What she was saying makes me think, I don't remember dreams, but I was a Navy wife for 20 years, so I wasn't around my real close friends. And when I think of it, many times, I would all of a sudden think of them, and then 4 days later I'd get a letter. So it was because they were writing me, see, and thinking about me. And I got those messages lots of times.
Well, you see,
and that wasn't in a dream. I mean,
no,
I would just find myself thinking about them all day long.
I have this ability of, you know, phone rings, and I almost invariably know who it is or whoever calls it. I would just, you know, the reverse would say, I call somebody and say, I was just thinking of you. It works both ways. That's when you're attuned to people and
because they are the
same.
They were writing
the same wavelength. You remember Nancy was talking about same wavelength. Were you here last week? No. Well, our teacher last week was talking about colors and energy that the aura has, and that people can be on the same wavelength. That some of these terms mean what they say. That we are on the same wavelength, so to speak. When you dream, though, of people that you have known in the past, let's say in high school or in college, or in high school, as you were telling, then you go back, say, you can ask yourself, in what way is that situation similar to the one that I'm in now? And you make a connection. With the time there, and it's sometimes quite revealing. But again, the synchronistic event is one that is not causally connected. Let me write it on the board. It's sort of like an underground connection, maybe the best way. Now we all know about coincidence. Oh, what a coincidence. I meet you here at Holden. But haven't you met people at Holden who happen to know friends and all kinds of connections that are quite surprising? Well, it's like an underground connection that is not causally connected, but alerts you to the fact that we are, that everything is connected. After all, we all have our live and have our being in God, just as we ended the prayer this morning. We are connected, but we don't see the connection until some event brings it to our attention. And we are usually taken aback. And I think we shouldn't be scared. We should just say thank you. That's the way I feel. Some of us have it more than others, just as we're all made differently. And I'll talk about that tomorrow, because we have different types and different functions. And some people have more of this intuitive quality. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. Yeah?
But if you have had a prophetic dream, might you look at other dreams as possibly prophetic?
Yes.
Rather than just synchronistic.
I have trouble with prophetic dreams because most of us are not prophetic. I think most of them are synchronistic. And we think they're prophetic because we see it happening out there. But it's because the dream has alerted us that we are alert to what's happening out here. Otherwise, we would just all pass over it. Think of all the things that happen, and only one or two stand out. You couldn't possibly remember everything. When you had a dream, that is an important event. Now, of course, if you're dreaming of somebody dying and they die the same night at the same time, that is more than synchronicity, but that's very rare. And I don't want to leave the impression that this is what most of us can do or experience, but it does happen. In fact, Jung reports one of those in his book on memories, dreams, and reflections. This book is a very unique autobiography. It's also available in all bookstores. Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. He has written an autobiography of everything that his inner life, his inner journey, and you don't know much about his outer life. In fact, this other book, and I have a bibliography here for anybody who would like to have more information. No, that's not it. The other book, His Life and Work, is, it's called His Life and Work. That gives his life story in terms of outer events. And just briefly, Carl Jung was a Swiss psychiatrist who lived from 1875 to 1961 and was a prolific writer, 17 collected works in difficult to understand German, most of which has been translated and now is available in small booklets. Collected work of Jung, there's an autobiography here of Jung related writings that you can have. And he worked with schizophrenics. He had a private practice, and he analyzed his own dreams extensively. He had a book in which he drew the dream images and insisted it was not an attempt at art, but at visualizing the images. And that's another way of getting in touch with what you dream, not writing it down with words, but drawing a little picture, cartoon, stick figure, it doesn't matter. Because then you go directly from image to image, and you don't have to go through the writing of words. Sometimes it's quite surprising. You're sitting at a round table, for example, or at a square table, and I'll talk about that too, that those shapes can be important. The numbers can be important. So back to Jung, he drew his dream images, and he built a tower out of stones like this, a huge tower, a round tower actually, in which he lived and worked, and he was a great cook, and he was a father of, had a wife who was also, has written Jungian things, had three or four children, and was not an absolute father by any means. He was earthy, he was intellectual, he was intuitive, and he was practical. He's a very many-sided man. And I think his theories have come into their own now. And as I said, he kept this dream journal and analyzed dreams. When he came into the analytic hour, for all that he knew, he said, he pretended, he came and forgot, said, I forget everything I know. He just listened one-on-one, intuitively. And that's the method of Jungian analysis. Face-to-face, intuitive listening, listening with the third ear. There's a book out that's called Listening with the Third Ear. Intuitively listening, making connections. As I said, or maybe I mentioned, I'm a retired therapist, psychotherapist, and so I had to. I knew this, but I had to also practice it and learn it in my supervisory hours. We all had to be analyzed. If you go to a therapist, I urge you to go to someone who has been analyzed, rather than to a psychiatrist who has an MD, though he can give you medication. He hasn't got as much psychological training, and he does not need to be analyzed himself, so he may not be as able to hear objectively. So Jung was many-sided, and he believed in dreams to the extent that in the last year, he died at age 85. When he was 84, he was approached by the BBC to write a book, a popular book, because his German is so hard. So he said, oh, I've done my work and just ready to sit back. But then he had a dream, and he was standing on a platform. He was talking to blue-collar workers. And they understood him, and they clapped. He woke up, and the next day he called the man, and he said, all right, I will do it, because my dream tells me that I need to write a popular book that's more easily understood. The result is Man and His Symbols, a book that almost everyone has seen. It's in every bookstore, Man and His Symbols. He wrote the first chapter, and his disciples, his followers wrote the other chapters. It's a fascinating book. It has beautiful illustrations. It's very understandable. I should say a word of caution. He did not like to have disciples. That's why I changed the word. He wanted people to follow and read and assimilate it, and not call themselves Jungian, but use his thoughts and explore and see how it fits. Everything had to click for the individual. And I like that approach. It has to be true for you, and is not something totally universal, though there are universal aspects to it. Any other questions? Yes.
Who is the author of the book, Dreams, Memories, and Reflections? I didn't get the name.
It's Carl Jung.
Carl
Jung himself.
Is it written by me? With the name
Carl.
Right.
Here it is. I have it as, he's the editor, but Yafi is one of the, I don't know. I think it's listed under Jung, but I think she's the co-editor or one of the writers. I think she has a chapter. There's four or five different people. This is the bibliography you can pick up. Okay, any other questions?
When you keep your dream journal going, do you follow other steps besides the ones that you have suggested here, like asking to remember and keeping your eyes closed in the morning before you wake up?
All right, I date them. I date them, and I write what happened the night before. That's important, the day before. That's rather important, either before or after, but I put the, we call that the context. You write down a word or two, let's say a big birthday party, you know, that may be important, or getting hold of it, whatever, you know, it's important, you know, where you are consciously. And then I date them the day that I, the night that I dream. So in other words, my dream last night would be the 11th, but other people date it by the day after. That's up to you, but just be consistent. The reason I date them the day before, because that's what would appear in a dream, more likely. I have not yet lived the 12th, you see. The other thing I do is to not worry about the fact that there are several episodes that are not at all connected. I maybe make a dash and write down everything. I don't edit it at all, and I don't look at it. I just write it and let it be, and then maybe at the end of the month, I take them all and look them over and I type them so that I have them all together. But I wouldn't necessarily spend all day looking about, thinking about it, but if it comes back to you, then it means it's rather important. But if you just put it in your folder and look at it later, then you'll see sort of a pattern. It's almost like a golden thread going through. It's very fascinating. Yeah, that's about it. Somebody asked me about writing many details. That's up to you, depending on how much you need. Some people just need keywords, others like to write every little detail. And drawing as many images as you can. Okay? Yes?
A lot of times you're dreaming on it, it's really something either real good or it's real bad or something. Yeah. And then just when it's going to happen, when it comes to the climax, then you wait. So you never know how it ended. You never know if you happened or whatever.
But the feeling is there. You know, well, that's important. You write down how you felt at the end, whether you felt happy or sad or anxious. The feeling is as important as the outcome. Some people can go back and finish their dream and find out how it happened, how it came out, what the result was, but that's too bad. But sometimes that's a saving grace, because as I said, when you're falling from something high, you don't crash, you wake up.
A lot of times you're real glad, oh, I'm glad that was just a dream.
Yeah.
How did you first get really interested in dreams?
Well, I decided to become a therapist and had to go through analysis, and in analysis you bring the dreams, because they're like a mirror to tell the analyst what's going on unconsciously, because you're... Freud and Jung both talked about the defense mechanisms, and your conscious mind says doesn't like to look at some of the shadier things in your psyche. So that's why you bring in the dreams. It's fascinating. Remember, it's like a mirror or an x-ray. If you go to the doctor and you have a sprained or broken ankle, only the x-ray can tell the difference. Similarly, you come to the analyst, and you can talk and talk and talk, but one dream will be like a key to help you unravel what's going on.
Didn't I read somewhere that it can be very stressful to a person if they're interrupted and not permitted to dream?
Yes, I mentioned that. That can be very stressful if you are consistently awakened. That's why there's several conditions. One, in hospital, sometimes you have to be awakened to get your medication. When you have tiny babies that awaken you at all hours, you know how you feel. Remember, you think you're standing on your head. It's important for to take naps and all that to catch up. It's just essential for your mental health to be.
Well, so when you're looking for a therapist,
yes,
then you should. What guideline would you suggest?
Someone who has been analyzed
themselves.
Yeah. No. And usually they will give you a free hour to decide if they want to work with you and if you want to work with them. I think that's a very good practice. Not everybody can work with everybody. I have to admit here that I had great success. I work mostly with artists and people with psychological blocks. People kept reading journals. But there was one lady who came in who was maybe agnostic or Unitarian, and a slight antagonism. She came in to me and for me to her. So what did I do? I spent half an hour telling her about my faith. She never came back. She needed someone who was more, not a Christian or something. I wasn't going to talk about their faith anyhow. But I must have done this unconsciously because somehow I must have known that would turn her away. But I have worked successfully with everyone else. I've been actually friends with one or two of my former clients. Well, thank you. I'll see you tomorrow and we'll talk about your new clients.